call the next item.
Item 822, accept the regional overdimensional truck route study as the strategy for improving the movement of overdimensional freight in the city of Portland.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm pleased today that the Portland Bureau of Transportation is here to present the overdimensional truck study that will provide a local provides local jurisdictions with a comprehensive assessment of overdimensional truck movements to more effectively plan for their safe and efficient routing within and through the metro region. Here to present it is PBOT's Bob Hillier and Pia Welch, who I believe is you chair of our freight?
Yes, chair.
Freight Advisory Committee. Great. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you and good morning, Council. Again, my name is Bob Hillier for the record. I am the Freight Planning Coordinator for the Portland Bureau of Transportation. With me today is Pia Welch, Chair of the Portland Freight Committee. So what I want to do today is just give you a brief overview of the packet that we that was handed out about the overdimensional truck study. It was recently completed. So I just want to touch on the key highlights of the study, the main elements that were included in there, and some of the key recommendations that affects Portland.
What is that, a picture of? It looks like something from NASA.
It very well could be a very large cylinder-type item. So I got a couple of other neat pictures here. So
maybe
I grabbed this off the web, so this I don't know if this was local or not. So, but this, it actually looks like it's some type of
missile.
Large conduit. Anyway, okay. I got some good pictures here. So anyway. So before we get into the main presentation, the first thing I want to describe is what exactly are overdimensional loads. Trucks obviously carry all different types of commodities and goods and deliveries all throughout the region, all different sizes and shapes. But there is a certain class of commodity that is being moved that is larger than most other commodities being moved, and they require a permit from the Oregon Department of Transportation. And these are loads that meet a certain dimension requirement. So basically loads that are 8.5 feet wide, have a height of 14 feet or greater, length of 40 feet or exceeding 5 feet beyond the end of a trailer, or a load that is a gross vehicle weight that exceeds 80,000 pounds. And there's all different ways to weigh these loads. And we also look at loads of different axles and things like that. So basically the real large items that are they're not typical part of your goods movement. And just a common example of this is construction equipment. This is the most common, through our analysis, this is the most common type of overdimensional load, which is moved throughout the region. Roughly 30% of the classified overdimensional loads are construction equipment. This is an excavator. So excavators, cranes, log loaders are real common, particularly in Clackamas County area. So again, this is what we're talking about where we mean overdimensional vehicles or overdimensional loads. Now, as part of the study, there was also, yes, here's a nice picture. There's also another load classified as super loads. So these are kind of out of the ordinary, and I don't know if you can guess what this is, but this is a wind turbine blade. So if you ever go out to eastern Oregon or Washington, you'll see the wind turbines out there. And those individual blades, there's three per windmill. They're about 125 feet long themselves. So this is classified as more of a super load. This is not really common, but these loads do move around the region. Obviously, in the Northwest, we have quite a few of these loads coming in. These particular loads, they come in. They're manufactured in Asia. They come into the port of Vancouver, Washington. And then they head out to eastern Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. But again, these are not all that common. So a little background and purpose for this study. You know, why did we decide to do an overdimensional truck study? Well, in 2006, Council adopted the Portland Freight Master Plan. In that plan, there was about 30 actions and activities that we wanted to advance and learn more about. One of those specific actions and activities was to identify routing for overdimensional trucks through the city of Portland, and also an action to identify a strategy to transfer the US 30 bypass Lombard to Columbia Boulevard. Columbia Boulevard is a designated freight route, but US 30 bypass through the St. John's area, that's a state road. There's a temporary designation for that to be the high route until we can make the necessary improvements on Columbia Boulevard. this study helps us advance moving in that direction. So with the analysis that we've completed here, we pulled together actually the partner agencies for this study. I want to emphasize this is not a City of Portland study. This is a regional study. This is really a study for Metro. And the partner agencies included ODOT, Metro, City of Portland. We served as the project manager for the study, Clackamas and Multnomah County. And again, the main purpose is to provide local jurisdictions with a comprehensive assessment and a better understanding how these loads move throughout the region. And mainly what it does provide, it provides a technical basis for planners and engineers when we're doing our local transportation system plans to get better understanding how these loads need to be accommodated, their impacts on a roadway system. So it really forms a technical basis for making future decisions. So key elements of the project. We initiated this project in the fall of 2015. Most of the work was completed at the end of last year. Our consultant, DKS, we hired, they completed the final report in March of this year. So it's relatively new. We pretty much wrapped everything up. Stakeholder involvement, what we did here, we pulled together representatives from the heavy hauling industry and also staff, state and local staff that issue over-dimensional permits, and also members of the Portland Freight Committee. And basically, just all got together in a room, and we really looked at the critical routes for overdimensional that are being used throughout the region for overdimensional movements. So they were a really key resource. We completed the first system inventory of 34 identified routes through the whole through the three-county metro region. So we have a really good document, which really helps our planners and engineers when we're making improvements on our roadways. We identify the function of the roads, the policy designation. We inventoried all the facilities on the road, bridges, bridge structures of that nature, and we inventoried all current projects that are being done. And more importantly, what we looked at, we wanted to identify what some of those system constraints are, and I'll get into that in a moment here. What are the physical barriers to overdimensional movements based on the state standards for height and weight restrictions? And our consultant also came out with recommendations of solutions and recommendations along these corridors. So I will go to that in a second here. One of our first tasks was to map the overdimensional system. This is really hasn't been really done before. So again, we tapped our stakeholder group, the hauling industry, our permitting staff, and members of the Portland Freight Committee. And we just looked at what are the key primary strategic routes for moving everyday overdimensional vehicles. And here's a map here. We identified roughly 34 corridors. Some of these corridors cross over different jurisdictional boundaries. To the left, Cornelius Pass Road is parts in Multnomah County, other parts in Washington County. Same thing with 82nd Ag, which is identified as a pretty key overdimensional route that's in City of Portland and also Clackamas County. And we color-coded it by jurisdictions. In the City of Portland, there's 10 over-dimensional routes. And if you notice on a map, most of the routes are identified in our industrial areas. Most of them are in the Rivergate Industrial Area, Northwest Industrial, and Swan Island. So these are common routes that are used for general freight movement anyway. So a key part of our analysis, Oregon Department of Transportation, we were able to utilize their single-trip permit database. And Chris and their staff, they pulled together over 20,000 records for a three-year period. And that gave us a really good snapshot of the type of goods that are being moved throughout the region and dimension of those loads. And that database really provided us some valuable information to identify what some of the key constraints are, and also to identify solutions.
Can I ask a very basic question
here?
So if I'm a trucker on one of these, quote, over-dimensional loads, I have to get an ODOT permit in order to complete the delivery?
That's correct. So if you're a certain dimension, like I said, high, loads that are over 14 feet long, 80,000 pounds gross vehicle weight, they issue single-trip permits. Now, certain companies, they get a continuous operating variance permit.
But so let's just stick with the single permit, single-trip permit.
Yeah.
And does that permit specify the route that I have to take?
Yes.
So it's a time and a route, and it's for one trip.
That's correct. Generally, how it's set up, a company, if they want to move an excavator somewhere, say from Clackamas County to the Pearl District, They would get a permit from ODOT, and they would issue a the permit for the route. The hauler has to provide that information to the state. Now, if there's a part of that route which is a lot of routes are on state roads and local roads. If it's on a local road, they also need a permit from the city or the local jurisdiction.
What if it's on a interstate?
They usually go through ODOT.
For example, I'm thinking of the example we sometimes see on I-5 of big trucks moving homes, and there's a very elaborate operation. They usually operate during off-peak times. There's there's a smaller truck up front heralding what's to come, oversized loads, and it seems like it's a very prescribed process.
Yes, it is. Because obviously, they got to know what route they're going to take. What are some of the vertical clearances? Some of the bridges. If you have a very high load, obviously they don't want to hit a bridge or any other structure or go over a bridge, which is weight limited, and if the load is overweight.
And, sir, let me just ask one more very basic question because it's an excellent presentation. I just want to make sure I understand it. So ODOT issues the single trip permit. What about if the truck is going to go on a city arterial? Does the city issue its own permit, or has that been delegated to ODOT?
Certain cities will delegate it to ODOT for issued permits.
How about in Portland?
But Portland, we issue our own permits.
So if you're planning a trip and you're going to be on a state road, a federal road, and a local city arterial, you'd potentially have to have three permits?
Well, not federal. I mean, the highways, the interstate highway system is managed by ODOT, so they would go to the state. So the state would issue a permit for the state portion of the road, whether it's an interstate highway, US-30 bypass, which is a state road, 82nd.
And PBOT would issue a permit for our portion?
That's correct. So if they have to travel on a local road, then they would get a permit from us. And then our engineering staff will look at that, they'll look at the route, and then they'll look at the dimensions of the load and see if they're going to be going under any bridges that have low vertical clearance or over any bridges that have a weight limitation.
And do you have the discretion in your piece of this to prescribe the time that the trip occurs?
It's not clear to me how that is done in terms of the time of day when that is.
Because it seems to me some of these monster trucks, the city might have an interest in saying, sure, you can do this, but we prefer you do it during non-rush hour times.
I know generally, actually, I've been on a couple of these loads. The haulers, they prefer to do it at night if it's really large because they don't want to have to deal with traffic and also a lot of the people and vehicles on a road. So they would prefer to do that. Certain loads, like construction equipment, is time sensitive. They might have to get at a certain site, at a certain prescribed time. But I'm not. It's not clear whether we prescribe a specific time for that, or whether there's a limitation.
Thank you for that.
Oh, sure. So, just quick wrapping up the single trip permit. This provided us a great database, and it gave us a really good snapshot of the type of loads. Again, one of the takeaways from this: most of overdimensional loads is construction equipment. 90% of all the high loads, the overheight loads, were 15 feet or less. Now, this is an important piece of information because when we were looking at our vertical clearance of our bridges and which bridges can accommodate most of these loads. And basically, 99.9% of the high loads that are moved throughout the whole three-county metro region, I mean, could be accommodated in our bridge system. So there's a very small percent that cannot be accommodated of the high loads. Length and the width of the loads we found is not so much of an issue for the drivers. They're able to accommodate them, but they have special trucks and steering equipment so they could get around a lot of tight turns. But height is an issue for some of the drivers, and also heavy loads. A number of our bridges, particularly in Portland, are older infrastructure, and some of them have weight limitations on them. So that's also an issue. So what I want to do now is just briefly touch on three Portland projects that came out of the study. There's 24 recommendations as part of this study. So there's three in Portland that I think are really key. One is North Columbia Boulevard. They're all in the Rivergate Industrial District. Two are in Columbia Boulevard, and one's on North Portland Road. This is the I-5 bridge, which goes over Columbia Boulevard and Union Pacific Railroad. This is a known choke point. This was one of our target areas that we wanted to look at as part of the study. Nobody has really taken a look at this to see, what could be done with this choke point. It's a 16.5-foot vertical clearance. The state standard for vertical clearance is roughly 17 foot 4 inches. So we had our engineering staff, our DKS consultant team, they looked at this, and one of the questions was, you know, can we raise this bridge? Well, one of the problems, you got the Union Pacific Railroad. You raise a bridge, that's very expensive. You got to go from a long distance to get the adequate clearance. And if you notice that there's two double-stack trains there, they barely make it under, that's Columbia Boulevard I-5 off-ramp. So you've really got, you have to barely have clearance here. You probably have to raise the off-ramp. If you raise the off-ramp, you're probably affecting the main line. So it became pretty clear early on. That's not really feasible. So our consultant team recommended to lower the roadbed. There's a complication in this particular area. Kinder Morgan has a jet fuel line which serves PDX, which goes underneath the road here. So we got some data for that, and Kinder Morgan's, they didn't want to provide too specific information for security reasons, but we feel we could actually lower the roadbed to get that necessary clearance, get an additional foot or so. So this is information that we didn't have before, and this helped answer the question of what constraints are identified on Columbia Boulevard that need to be that can be fixed to help transfer the US 30 bypass.
Can I just ask you another just basic question?
Oh, sure.
Are we legally obligated to tailor our system to accommodate whatever truckers come up with? Because, I mean, at some point they could stack them three or four. I mean, and you're talking about now raising bridges, lowering bridges, doing all this work. This is a very costly exercise. Mm-hmm. Are we legally obligated to do that, or are the truckers required to adapt to our system?
There's no legal obligation. This is a direction from council, from our freight master plans, to identify a strategy to transfer the US 30 bypass to Columbia Boulevard. In order for that to happen, all the overheight vehicles that are now accommodated on US 30 bypass Lombard would need to be accommodated on Columbia Boulevard. So, I mean,
look, again, ultimately, it's Commissioner Saltzman's recommendation at some future time where this fits into the CIP and what we
right.
do. But and I'm all for freight mobility. I mean, I've supported mm-hmm. the master plan. But when I see a slide like this and a monster truck like that, and I'm told we're going to spend money lowering a bridge in order to accommodate something like this.
This is the railroad. These are double stack trains here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean.
Or double stack trains.
Yeah.
If we're going to do that for the railroads, we have a few other things we'll want to negotiate with the railroad. So I'll make a mental note of that because we don't always get very far on our wish list. And if we're going to make these kinds of changes, I think we may have some leverage to do things like the greenways.
All these are extremely complex projects. This is the first time we actually had a look at this because everybody over the years scratched their head. What do we do with this choke point here? You've got the jet fuel line. You've got the Union Pacific Railroad. You know, can we raise the bridge? We didn't even know that. We didn't know what we didn't know before we did this study. So at least now we have some information. We have some very general basic cost information to see what it might be to lower the roadbed, which seems like if the council did want to pursue this project, at this point that would seem to be the most feasible option. And actually, there's another thing that came up through our Portland Freight Committee, through Bill Burgle, who's a long-term member. Union Pacific Railroad, they would like to double track a lot of their system. And if they did double track this section of the railroad, there might be a way they could use a different depth girder, which if they did that, that might give us the clearance. So there's all different options with this. But this is one of the main choke points that the study was targeted to look at. And safety, I will. Yeah. The other choke point on Columbia Boulevard, this is the George Middle School pedestrian bridge. It's 16 feet high. It was constructed in 1969. It was refurbished, I believe, in 1990 or the 90s to put on ADA ramps. This is another choke point on Columbia Boulevard for high loads. The recommendation here was to look at either raising the bridge an extra foot or possibly to take the bridge down and put an at-grade crossing here. Just found out last week through a House Bill 2017, a transportation package, $1.5 million has been allocated for improvements at this section here. So we got money to actually look at this in a little more detail here. Columbia Boulevard is a wide road. It's 60 foot of pavement, 5 foot lanes, and it's posted at 40 miles an hour. It's a major freight route. So there are some issues that would have to be addressed for having an at-grade crossing here. And the other choke point on the system in North Portland is on North Portland Road between this is the Columbia Slough Bridge. This is the old Swift Highway between Marine Drive and Columbia Boulevard. It used to be our road. It used to be the state road. We took the road over, but the state still owns the bridge. This is weight limited to about 105,000 pounds. And through our data that we got through our single-trip permits, this weight limit on this bridge limits 98% of all the heavy loads on our system. So, again, this is a state bridge here. We'd like to have an opportunity to work with ODOT to refurbish this bridge here. So one of the key points I forgot to mention with the study, the map that I showed you before is – let me go back real briefly. Not only is this a key freight route for over-dimensional loads, but these are just key safety routes. In the event of an emergency, an earthquake, these are the routes that are going to be providing the key equipment and goods that are going to serve our region in an event like that. So they really serve a multiple purpose as well. So next steps. What I'd like to request is for Council to accept the study as our strategy for accommodating over-dimensional loads in the region and to include the three project recommendations that I just described in our transportation system plan. And I do want to point out that those three projects have already been identified on some of our draft lists for our transportation system plan update. They also been included on the regional transportation plan draft list as part of their update, and we also included it on our transportation system development charge update or draft list. So they've been recognized through this study that these are projects that we wanted to put in our plans. We're not sure when they may or may not get done, but we just want to recognize these are important features and these are important elements in our transportation system. So I went a little bit over, but I can answer any other questions you might have.
Ms. Wells, did you want to add anything?
No, just thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Carla, is there any public testimony?
No one signed up.
All right.
I move to accept the report.
Second.
It's a resolution.
Oh. It's a resolution.
It's a resolution. Oh, yes, it is.
So we are
gonna
resolving to adopt the recommendations, but they're non-binding city policies. So, Commissioner Fish, if you...
Yeah.
Did you have...
I'm going to make a comment, but my view is we're accepting the report, and there's three projects that they are recommending the commissioner in charge take a good hard look at. Ultimately, it's my understanding is it's Dan's call as to whether to do them and in what sequence.
Okay. Carla, can you please call the roll?
Saltzman.
Well, thank you both for being here this morning, and appreciate Metro leading this effort to take a look at these key bottlenecks or choke points for moving freight through our region. It's very important that we do that. Thank you. Aye.
Okay. Fish?
Yes, thank you for an excellent report, and thanks for the answers, the very clear answers you gave to our questions. this discussion brought back a very bad memory for me that goes back over 20 years. When I hired a moving company to move our family stuff from the East Coast to the West Coast, and we hired a reputable firm. They had a big load. And the first overpass they hit in the Bronx was too low. And it sheared the top of the truck off like a sardine can. And we weren't consulted about this because the truck continued on its way. Went through the Midwest, ran into some stormy weather, some snow and sleet and rain. And... literally, when it arrived in Portland, almost everything in the truck was destroyed. The one good thing we got out of it was 2 weeks at the old Mallory Hotel.
That's where I stayed when I moved to Portland.
But it was my first encounter with one of the issues you're raising here, which is, thinking about freight mobility in terms of the barriers that big trucks have. And all I would say is thank God for insurance. Commissioner Saltzman, the one thing that did get my attention, though, is one of the recommendations to you is the Northeast Columbia Boulevard UPRR Bridge Underpass. And whenever I hear any reference to railroads, and particularly Union Pacific, I hear opportunity. I'm not picking on the Union Pacific, but historically, they've been some of the hardest parties to negotiate some of the issues that we're trying to move on that Dan is now responsible for, like greenways. And that's partly because railroads don't generally think that greenways and railroad tracks should coexist. Now, we know in parts of the city we've been able to work that out. But we're not going to have a greenway along Sullivan's Gulch. We're not going to finish the North Portland Greenway. We're not going to connect the system unless we have a willing party with one or more of our railroads. And Dan, I was intrigued here because this seems to be an area where the railroads have a strong interest in us doing something, and it may give you the leverage to say, yeah, we're interested in that, and we'd also like your help to complete our greenway circuit. Yeah. And so that may give us leverage to have that conversation.
I'll make a quick plug for our Portland Freight Committee. Union Pacific Railroad and Burlington Northern, they've been members since the committee started 14 years ago. So I know Union Pacific went through some staffing changes, but they've always been at the table, so again, to help with these negotiations.
Yeah, and just want to also close by saying that when we talk about freight mobility, we're talking about getting things through our community. We're talking about jobs. We're talking about things that are very key to our economic future. And there's a lot of good family wage jobs that depend on freight getting through our community. Emphasis on safely getting through our community. So this is a thoughtful report, and I thank you for your presentation. Aye.
You're welcome.
You Daly.
Thanks for the presentation. Aye. The resolution is passed.